I just have to say thank you for that beautiful music. And for those of you who may have missed it, that is an original composition that we just got to hear. And wow. Yes. So, before I begin, a couple of quick notes. First, this reflection is about loving ourselves and also about mental health. There will be mentions of tender and sensitive topics, and so take care of yourselves. Meet your own needs. Do what you need to do for yourself. That is true today and every day. Second note, I am not a counselor, a therapist, a social worker, a psychologist, or a psychiatrist. I am not qualified to provide counsel unless you want to talk about your theology, your spiritual and ethical journey, or the best Die Hard movie. It's number 4, tied with number 1. You're welcome. Third, the more we speak about a thing, the less terror it holds. Part of our call as adherents of reason, science, compassion, and care is to listen and speak and act bravely in places where silence has done harm. We can hardly love the hell out of the world if we can't even name its circles. And so I invite you today to come into a safe space, but even further, one step further, into a brave space. I invite you to be curious and to be courageous. I'd like to begin with a story. It was written by Alea Kimler. She's a Unitarian Universalist minister from Massachusetts. I first visited a children's psychiatric unit 22 years ago. The boy's mother and I stood facing one another in the hallway by the locked door, not saying a word because there was nothing to say. He was 10 years old and seemed not to want to live. He had been putting belts and yo-yo strings around his neck. I reached toward her and put my hand on the flat plane just beneath her collarbones, that place where sadness collects in my own body. I was a new minister then, and guarding against such intimate gestures had not yet become a habit. Much later, she told me it had helped, that in that moment she felt less like the only mother in the world who ever had a suicidal child. I visited the boy every few days, getting buzzed in through the locked doors. Soon we had a routine of finding a quiet place on the floor to play chess and checkers. He beat me every game, partly because I had forgotten anything resembling strategy, and also because I was paying more attention to the songs we sang as we played. He began this musical conversation on my second visit, humming under his breath as he moved his pieces, and then he started adding words. Mostly the words were about what was happening on the board. I am going to jump you, he sang. If I move like this, you cannot jump me, I sang back. I wondered if he was singing me another, truer song underneath. So I was listening carefully and trying to choose what to sing back. You are doomed, there is no way out, he sang as he claimed another of my checkers. I am not doomed, I answered. There is always another chance as long as you keep playing. Aus der Kriegsschule des Lebens, was mich nicht umbringt, macht mich stärker. Out of life's school of war, what does not destroy me makes me stronger. Friedrich Nietzsche, 1888. Nietzsche said it first in a book called, gloriously, Twilight of the Idols or How to Philosophize with a Hammer. I mean, tempting. And I have said it many times, mostly joking, limping in after a long, bad run with friends. Oh, or when my ice cream scoop falls to the ground on a summer's day. Oh, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Sometimes I've said it with grim determination, a celebration of survival, gritted teeth through pain, a bleak smile in the face of bad odds, bad news, bad behavior. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You know, except when it doesn't make you stronger. Except when it makes you weaker and the illness becomes systemic, and then, yeah, it does eventually kill you. So then I guess it's not so much what didn't kill you as what did. Even Nietzsche knew that truth, a much overlooked fact. He wrote those words in a section of the book that was called Maxims and Arrows, in which he presented sayings and aphorisms, and then, true to the title of the book, went after their prosaic wisdom with a hammer. What does not destroy me makes me stronger, or maybe older, or maybe sadder and wiser, or maybe, if we're truly lucky, what doesn't destroy us does make us happier and more whole. Mental illness isn't usually like that. Let me be clear before I go one step further that I am not talking about neurodivergence. Folks with one form or another of autism or many other mental differences are not mentally ill. These folks sometimes develop mental illnesses, depression, anxiety, and so on, because we live in a world that is designed for the neurotypical, and it's hard. But neurodivergence does not equal mental illness. Moving on. We live in a culture that fosters mental illness and then pretends it doesn't exist. For a large majority of the population, the daily trauma and indignities of life on the margins of power create the perfect conditions for ill health of every kind. But of course, life on the margins of power also doesn't create perfect conditions for treatment. And another side note, and I apologize, this reflection is apparently built only of disclaimers and tangents, but when I talk about marginalized populations in this context, I am talking about every American who is uninsured, every American who is underinsured, every American family that could be wiped out by one serious medical crisis. I'm talking about those of us who get 6 therapy visits and then the money runs out whether you're better or not. I'm talking about those of us who finally get some help and then can't afford the medications we need. Unitarian Universalists often talk about loving the hell out of the world, and this time I'm adding loving the hell out of ourselves. All too often we are told in life to love our suffering, to make it meaningful, to somehow grit our teeth and get through it. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But I'm with Nietzsche. Go after that notion with a hammer, because too many people have not been stronger than despair and illness and shame, and that shouldn't be a death sentence. Too many people have been lost. I'm not going to rattle off statistics. You know how bad it is. We're called to be a people in love with health and with wholeness, all humans and us. We're called to, as our website says, provide caring support to our congregation and service to those in need in the community and in the world. And in the big systemic sense, that means the same things that it always means, and you've heard this chorus before. It means organizing and voting. It means protesting, continuing to stand up or lie down or sit in or crawl forward for universal health care, including mental health care, including meds, including counseling and therapies. We do all that because the twist is, the sucker punch to the gut is, as UUs, we are called to heal the world. But as individuals, we can't guarantee the healing of one single soul. We can't even guarantee the healing of our own selves. All we have is love and courage. Like the minister in my story, most of my experience of psychiatric hospitals has been in visiting others. And what I've learned from those visits and from experiences of my own mental health issues and just from life in general is that I can't heal or save or fix anyone else. And there's some heartbreak that comes with that, but also a sense of relief. I don't want people to be in mental and emotional distress. Of course, obviously. No one does. And I'll do everything that I can to help people feel better. But I can't control anything anyone else does other than myself. And that, well, it's a huge relief. For one thing, it means I'm not in charge, which is great news for us all. For another thing, it means that I can concentrate on getting my own mental health in order, an ongoing process for sure that involves weekly therapy bill visits and some fun medications. Finally, if I and we cannot heal, save, or fix anyone else, it leaves us more time to work into what we can fix, which is creating a world where affordable access to mental health care is the norm. We can make space in our cities and in our churches for those struggling with depression, anxiety, and other issues. We can create a culture that is based not on using but on giving, one in which daily life is not traumatic for the vast amount of Americans. Ask the teachers and kids at any public high school in Texas. The world is a scary place for babies and kids and grown-ups who dwell in the instability of poverty and scarcity and need. It changes the brain when that's your normal. You cannot react to things as quickly. You lose neuroplasticity, a big word that means the ability to change and develop and adapt quickly to new input. It's past time to repair those changes and nurture our siblings and protect ourselves and others from the parts of our society that hurt us and isolate us and deny us. I can't save you. And you can't save me. Even my therapist can't. And we probably don't need to be saved so much as we need to be loved. But we might be able to create a web of connection, life, care, compassion that will save us all together. Let's return to Pastor Alea Kimple and her young congregant playing checkers and chess on the floor of the day room, singing to one another. She writes, "He never protested when I got ready to go. But sometimes as I walked him back to his room, he held my hand and leaned his head against my arm. And on those days, I cried in the parking lot. I wanted so much to believe that God was watching over this boy, that God was tender and protective and fiercely on the side of life, and that this boy would not slip away. Months later, after he left the hospital, the boy presented me with a combined game of chess and checkers during a church service. He told our congregation we had played a lot together when he was in the hospital with sadness, and that he beat me every single time. 'This game is for you, so you don't forget how to play,' he told me. The boy is a man now. He is married and has good work and two little ones of his own. He has not been lost, and we have not forgotten." Spirit of life, of tender-hearted hope, help us protect and cherish each other, each child, each youth, each adult as beloved. Today, let us hold specially the ones who are sad and the ones who are in danger of being lost. Give us strength to gather them into our own wide open hearts and hold them safe there until the ground is solid again beneath their feet. So be it. Amen.